Hello from the newsroom of the Financial Times in London. I'm Suzanne Blumpson. Britain's high streets are in crisis as struggling retailers are forced into bankruptcy and the property market has a huge excess of space. Patrick Jenkins discusses what has caused this and if there is a remedy with Judith Evans, our property correspondent, and Jonathan Ely, our retail correspondent.
So, Jonathan, Debenhams is the latest in a string of retailers to fail as customers desert the traditional high street shops. How bad are things at Debenhams?
They are pretty bad at Debenhams and have been for some time. I think the customer offering has not really kept pace with fashion, and they have the problem common to many retailers once owned by private equity groups, in that they have an enormous store estate, far too much space, that's let at high rents and on very inflexible leases. So in some cases, they're tied in for 20, 30 years with no real prospect of reducing that commitment, except by doing a CVA process, which is, of course, what they have done.
This is the company voluntary arrangement, which is basically managed liquidation, in a sense.
It is a form of insolvency, yes, that basically imposes some losses on creditors if 75% or more of creditors vote in favour for it. In reality, the creditors who lose out tend to be landlords who have to accept reduced rents and store closures at short notice. And for the most part, other creditors get off scot-free. Although, interestingly, in this case, Debenhams has also asked that local authorities, in some cases, take a bath on the business rates that they receive.
Are they likely to succeed in that? And how representative is this of what is happening more broadly on the high street?
So I think a very important point to make about CVAs is that whether they succeed or not depends on whether there's a restructuring plan and a business plan to go with it. It's no good just cutting your rental obligations and your costs for a few years in the hope that that will save a business. If your products offering is not resonating with customers and your sort of fashions are tired and your stores are in the wrong place, a CVA will not help you much. You have to have another plan. And it's for that reason that many companies that did CVAs ended up failing anyway. Woolworths did a CVA and then failed. BHS did. Toys R Us did.
And your prediction on Debenhams?
I think they will carry on for another perhaps year or two. I think I would give it 50-50 whether they go into administration again. And if that does happen, then I think Mike Ashley will buy them out of it.
Well, we'll hold you to that prediction. Mike Ashley, of course, is the slightly controversial founder of the Sports Direct retail chain and owner of Newcastle United Football Club. Judith, just to bring you in here, as Jonathan was saying, obviously one of the big victims in this whole type of process is the landlord sector, if you like, the CVA structure that is used by retailers to restructure their leases. It can be pretty penal for the landlords. Have the landlords brought this upon themselves by being too greedy up to now?
Well, that's one point of view. And I would say that landlords are rapidly discovering that they're in a new world. They had previously been able to sign these leases, which would last for decades, which would include upward only rent reviews, and which to some degree meant that they could just kind of sit back and watch the money roll in. They would do a credit check on the tenant and then to some degree, that was their work done. That's not the case anymore. And indeed, this rash of CVAs has really called into question the value of leases and the value of retail properties, because suddenly you can't look ahead to this income stream in the future, almost from any store, given the level of the upheavals at the moment. So I think there's a sense in the property industry that this current meltdown has quite a bit further to go. There are very few shopping centres trading at the moment. There are record low numbers of shopping centres changing hands. And those that are changing hands are often actually as redevelopment opportunities to be demolished and transformed into housing. So I think there's a sense that we're quite far from that market bottoming out. And even the landlords, which own some of the best shopping centres in the country, listed groups like Hammerson and Into, are kind of wrestling with what to do with their future, trading at steep discounts to the book value of their assets. So it's not looking pretty.
We had the former chairman of Marks & Spencer, Robert Swannell, telling us that he thought he was even bleaker than your assessment here on this, I think, suggesting that the future, yes, there is a future for the British High Street, if you like, but that there's going to have to be a total resetting of both rents and rates, to bring in Jonathan's point about councils taking a bath as well, and that this is going to be felt over the next year or two with a pretty steep decline in the level of rents that landlords are going to be able to charge.
I think that's really true. I mean, to some extent, rent figures always massaged a bit anyway, because landlords will quietly give rent-free periods and other perks that mean that the leases aren't quite what they appear to be on the outside. But I think now that the sort of avalanche has begun, a lot of landlords are switching to turnover-based rents, which means they'll only receive money based on how well the store is doing, which immediately gives them much more kind of skin in the game, as it were, and makes them more responsible for making sure that consumers actually walk through the door.
And rates, there's been a lot of disquiet among traditional high street retailers about the way in which rates are charged. These, of course, are the taxes that are imposed based on the rentable value of the properties that the retailers use. And those who complain about it say that this isn't fair in an online shopping world where those competitors don't have to pay those kinds of taxes. Do you think the government is going to listen to this argument that there needs to be a big shake-up? Jonathan?
I think it will go through the motions of listening, but I don't think it will actually do much. And there are 30 billion reasons why that is the case. And those are the £30 billion that business rates raises in revenue each year, of which about a quarter comes from retail. There are lots of problems with the business rates system. It is very archaic. It's quite a sort of feudal tax. But I think it's also fair to point out that there are plenty of people doing perfectly well on the high street, despite their exposure to business rates. So companies like Next, Primark, JD Sports, or even humble old WH Smith, they all have things in common. They have very well-managed space. They churn their leases. They retain a lot of flexibility in their estates. And they seem to produce and sell what people want. And I think if you do that, you can overcome the obstacles in your way. And as to the fairness issue between online and offline operators, I think that's a bit of a red herring. I think that basically the cost structure of online retail is completely different to that of bricks and mortar retail. So yes, they pay far less in business rates, but they spend more on things like affiliate marketing, customer acquisition, and logistics and fulfillment than a traditional bricks and mortar retailer would.
What about the social side of this? Judith, there's been a recent example of Kirkcaldy on the east coast of Scotland where a shopping centre was put up for auction with the reserve price of £1. It doesn't suggest that there's a great vision for that location. What are the solutions here? You talked about some examples of shops being redeveloped into housing, but is that going to be a widespread solution?
Well, that's a sort of best case scenario. I mean, there are places like Maidenhead, Theresa May's constituency, where a shopping centre recently fell into receivership, but is expected to be redeveloped partially or wholly as homes. And that's a prosperous commuter town where there's loads of demand. But I think communities like Kirkcaldy have kind of deeper problems. There's not necessarily huge demand for housing there. And the problem sort of goes deeper than simply, oh, we've got one too many shopping centres. And it's those places where I think we really have to ask deeper questions about what are high streets for, and also what does the process of urbanisation mean for these smaller ageing communities?
One other social element, Jonathan, is how big an employer the retail sector is. Is it really a significant part of the economy?
Yes. So according to the ONS, retail directly employs about 3 million people in the UK. That doesn't include people like truck drivers and cleaners who are sort of indirectly dependent on the industry. And as retail goes through this structural transformation, the number of jobs falls every year. So last year, around 70,000 people lost their jobs in retail, according to the British Retail Consortium. Now, a large number of those jobs will be probably fairly low paid. Many of them will be part-time, and many of them will be done by women. And so they don't get anything like the political attention, for instance, that is focused on jobs at, say, Port Talbot, the steelworks in Wales, where about 4,000 people work. Or, for instance, at the Honda car factory in Swindon, where about 3,500 people work. So the absolute number at those facilities is much, much smaller than the number of people who are losing their jobs every year in retail.
We've been talking about the UK high street and the pressure on retailers. Clearly, a lot of those pressures are felt globally on traditional high street shops. Are you seeing the kind of situation that we've been describing here in the UK across Europe and parts of the world beyond Europe? Or is there something unique going on here?
I think the same underlying pressures are present elsewhere in the world. So the shift of what might be termed functional shopping to the internet, the trend towards more sort of experiential shopping. People want to have a day out rather than just go and buy a new shirt, etc. I think it's particularly pronounced, though, in the UK for three reasons. One is that we are in the vanguard of the shift into online shopping. Our rate of online shopping is basically one of the highest in the world. And you also have a great deal of property market volatility in the UK. Property is very financialized. It has lots of debt attached to it. Prices go up and down. We're all obsessed with prices. And I think when so many things are tied to property values, such as business rates, that creates an awful lot of financial pressure on retailers when property prices are high and demand for the products they sell is in some cases low.
So we can expect the volatility to continue. I think that's probably a fair prediction. Jonathan and Judith, thank you very much.
That was Patrick Jenkins, FT Financial Editor, talking to Judith Evans, Property Correspondent, and Jonathan Ely, Retail Correspondent. Thanks for listening. Remember, if you're not already a subscriber and would like to discover more FT content, you can find our latest subscription offers at ft.com/offer.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.